The Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab, number 91, for Monday, February 12th, 2007.
Greetings, folks, and welcome to the Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab. I'm Dave Hamilton. You're John Braun. No, he's John Braun. You.
I'm John Braun. And I'm back.
Valued listener. Yeah, we're back. That's right. John, as many of you surmised, John's trip last week left him in a less than ideal situation as far as bandwidth went. So instead of suffering through making it work over the phone, we simply took the week off. And I enjoyed it. I actually really.
Because we were thinking of all of you.
Yeah. We didn't want to torture anyone.
We shouldn't tell them that we were thinking of us and we just wanted to take a week off. Right?
Yeah, but tonight we are back with the long-awaited home networking show.
Oft promised.
That's right. There have been a lot of questions in, and I think we made the right move waiting as long as we did to do it to kind of get all of the, to get the gist of what you folks wanted to learn. So we've got that going on here. I don't know if we're going to get to any non-home networking related questions tonight. We should, because, you know, we're 2 weeks behind on all those now, but I don't think that's going to happen. So that's it. So in we go. And I think we are going to start tonight with a question from Alan that sort of sets things up very nicely here and gives us some context for what we're going to talk about. And so we'll spend some time talking about the basics and then peppering your questions in as it relates to this stuff. And like I said, trying to give it some context. So Alan writes, "Hi, Dave and John. I hope you're both keeping well. Have a question about networking. We have a network in our house, my G5 iMac and my two housemates' PowerBook G4s. And all the computers are connected to the network via a hub, which is also connected to the internet via a broadband modem. But our ISP in Ireland will only allow two IP addresses to connect at any one time. Now, the two guys I live with want to set up a wireless network so that they can work anywhere in the house, and we were wondering if we buy an Airport Express or Extreme, will that allow more than two of us to connect to the internet at once? Do we need a router? Is the Airport Extreme Express a router? What is a router? Is it different than a hub? I'm so lost." And Alan, we are here to answer all those questions for you. So
the answer is yes, yes.
I believe there's a lot of yeses. In fact, I think they're all yeses. So thank you very much. Good night. Wait, that's not enough. Okay. So
but it leads wonderfully into background about what the heck he's talking about. Yeah, because it does sound like gibberish of sorts, but no.
It's not
after
gibberish.
You listen to this.
That's right. So the idea is his cable company is giving him two addresses to use for multiple computers. Now, in the US, the common practice is that your cable company will only give you one address to use for your computer. So by default, you can't connect two computers up, but you can. And many of you probably are already doing this and may or may not understand why. So the idea here is every computer on the internet needs an address, a unique address, because otherwise other computers on the internet or on a network in general, the internet is just one big network. Is that the right thing to say, John? Is that right?
A big IP network.
It's a big IP network.
The internet is a big TCP/IP network. Of course, there are other protocols. But yeah, that's safe enough.
All right. So it's one big network, and every computer on it needs its own address. Otherwise, the other computers don't know how to talk to you. They need to have an address. And those addresses are what's called IP addresses. And we've all seen those. They're a set of four numbers, ranging anywhere from what, the 0 to 255, I believe, is the correct range there. So your cable company only gives you one. There are a limited amount of IP addresses out there, assuming IP version 4, and we're not going to talk about IPv6 tonight.
Version 6, right.
Yeah. So there's a way to get around it. And you want to talk about what that is and what the typical home networking router does?
Absolutely. So the way you get around that is although it's true that everybody can have one address, one thing that you can do is you can set up your we'll call it a router, Well, routers can do a lot of things. But anyway, so when you get a router like a Linksys or an AirPort or something like that, what happens is that it can perform something known as network address translation. And what's happening in that case is that you're basically creating two sides of the device. So the one side faces the network, and it does as it should. It grabs an IP address. But what it does...
Faces the internet network.
Yes. Or your internet provider, like your DSL or cable modem line. So as far as they're concerned, you have one IP address on the internet as a whole, of which they're a gateway to that, or a router, a gateway. Right. Anyways, so you get one IP address.
And that address, just to be clear, doesn't get assigned to your computers in this scenario. It gets assigned to the router.
The device. Right. Now, we could, well, at the very basic, what you could do, maybe you're hinting at this, is just plug your computer in.
Right. That's right. You can skip the whole router thing, plug one computer in, and you're good to go. And many people do that. That's right.
Should we warn them about why they shouldn't do that? Or
we'll talk about that
later.
We'll
get to that at some point. So if you do that, your computer gets the IP address. But if you plug in something like a router, it gets the IP address. And then it has this other side that is only visible to your local computers, your local network. So it deals with it. Even though everything's plugged into the same box, it inside is creating this division between the outside, which is your ISP, and the inside, which is yours. And then what it does is something called network address translation. And what it does is it will take one, usually an IP address that's known as a non-routable IP address. You have a whole range of them, as Dave said, from 0000 to 255 and so on. But there are certain ranges of addresses that are meant for this purpose, that if you try to reach them on the internet, you will not reach them because the boxes on the internet will just say, huh?
Yeah,
because
they don't know how to get there.
They're not meant to forward that type of packet. So this is kind of a safety valve, if you will.
Right.
So one of the more popular ranges, for example, is 10.0.0.1, for example, the whole, or most of the 10 range there. So network address translation is also combined with something called DHCP, which is Dynamic Host Configuration Protocol.
Let's stay with NAT. Yeah. So the idea...
Stay with NAT.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, to wrap that up is that there is a mechanism, which we'll talk about in a moment, but NAT, what it will do is keep track of the mapping between your local machines, which will each get one of these non-routable addresses. So one may be like 10.0.0.1, 10.0.0.2, and inside of the router, it'll keep track of each of those and how they map to the one IP address. So basically, it's multiplying the number of machines that appear to be. So as far as they're concerned, all the traffic is still coming out of one IP address. But internally, you've done this clever little thing where each machine that's a NAT machine is unique. So you get around the problem of having more than one machine with the same address. It's taken care of in kind of a clever way.
Right.
And maybe you wanted to dig in a little deeper.
In a nutshell, what's happening is all the computers in your house, when you connect them to a router, are getting their own unique IP addresses. And then the router is combining all that traffic, sending it out as though it's only coming from the router using its lone IP address. And like John said, the router then manages the traffic on the way back in. So if you've got three computers on the network and each of them request a page from Google at the same time, they're each going to get their own page because the router is going to map that traffic in and out and split it up. In fact, if the router sees traffic that it hasn't requested for a specific computer, it'll ignore it. And that acts as a little bit of security, right? If you get some unsolicited stuff coming in, the router's just going to ignore it by design, not so much for security, though that like I said, that's the afterthought, but because, frankly, it doesn't know what to do with it, so it just throws it away. And there you go. So that's NAT routing, and that's how your routers work. And yes, the AirPort Extreme, the AirPort Express, any of the AirPort base stations, all the Linksys stuff that we talk about, Netgear, D-Link, any of these, home networking routers are going to do exactly this. That they are built to do it. In fact, out of the box, you plug them in. You plug, your AirPort base station into the cable modem. You connect to it with your Macs and your PCs, and boom, it's doing it out of the box. Now you may want to tweak it and mess with it, but out of the box, it is going to do all of this magic stuff that we just talked about here. In addition to that, it's going to do something that John touched upon, which is DHCP. What DHCP is Dynamic Host Control Protocol. You'll never need to know that again. But what it does is it allows the computers on your network to automatically get IP addresses from the router. So you don't have to go in and manually configure them. Once they attach to the network, either wired or wirelessly, they'll go and grab an address from the router. So all of this is happening magically behind the scenes. But we promised we'd explain it to you, and so here we are. So that's the IP address, NAT routing, and the role of the router, right?
So I think that pretty much answers all the questions. So
I think so.
In a nutshell, it makes you only need to consume one IP address.
Right.
The reason that they were consuming more is because, and this is a subtle difference, but they said a hub.
Yeah, no, this is a good thing to explain. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, if we talk about how a hub works, but a hub and a switch are similar in that they allow multiple devices to all be plugged into one segment of a network.
Right.
Basically multiplies the port. Hubs are pretty much old school right now. A hub was back when speeds were slower, and what would happen is everybody would be sitting on the same wire all the time, listening and watching all the traffic, and they would use a kind of clever protocol, binary exponential backoff, at least at the lowest layer. So what would happen is if somebody tried to talk and somebody else tried to talk, they'd be like, whoa, okay. And then they would compute a random number, and then everybody would try again. And it would increase exponentially, and it would be a binary increment. So you can see that, you know, the chance of the people continuing to collide, lessens. The problem is it's not very efficient, especially when you get high traffic or high bit rates like gigabit and stuff. It breaks down. There's a point where it just gets so clogged, whereas a switch is something that creates these little virtual circuits between everybody. So all the traffic is pretty much isolated between the source and the destination, except for broadcast, but we'll talk about that later. So switch is good. Hubs, I mean, I was looking online, and it's kind of hard to get I even searched like on Amazon, and most of the things I found were switches.
Yeah, you can't buy a hub these
So
days.
Hubs, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you may have an old one sitting around if you have nothing else, but, you know, going down to the local whatever store. I mean, they're in the grocery store now.
It's important to note, though, that a hub and a switch, though there's this difference of how fast and how efficient they are, really. A hub and a switch are in the same category when being compared to a router. The router does all the smart stuff that we just talked about. A hub and or a switch does none of that stuff. And if you plug a switch into your cable modem like Alan did, you'll find that only one of the computers gets an address, because the hub or the switch isn't going to go and grab an address in most cases. If it does, it's certainly not going to distribute it, and you're stuck. And again, most switches, even intelligent switches, aren't going to grab addresses. They just don't do that. So that was Alan's problem is you had three computers plugged into a switch, which basically just made your cable modem more ports to plug into.
Right.
But in the end, you were putting three computers on a circuit that was designed to support two, or at least programmed to support two. It could probably be programmed to support 200 if you wanted it to, if you paid them to. And so there was always one computer falling off the map. Putting the airport base station in there, or any of the other NAT-based routers that we discussed, that will solve that problem. So,
and if you're at kind of close out here, if you're at the layer level and you're talking about the lower portions of TCP/IP, for those that have looked at that, hubs and switches are operating at a very basic level of traffic. They don't have any smarts. The thing I want to toss in is usually you can get an idea whether the device does something smart if it's either called a router, or I have seen managed. If they say managed hub or managed router,
It's not going to do any NAT routing, though. That's going to do traffic shaping in some cases. Right, or it at least let you see statistics on your network, right?
So actually, that probably doesn't go at a high enough level. Okay,
no.
So that's a good point. Because I saw that term with some things, and sometimes it's not applied properly.
Right.
Because I saw it applied to things where I knew that, you know, they did more than that. So,
right.
I think you've seen a broadband router is the general classification
that's
of device,
right,
where it's definitely going to do, it's exactly meant for you to plug it in, and you have multiple machines all of a sudden.
Yep.
Cool. Well, that was a good way to open that can of worms.
That was quite the can of worms. That was good. All right, let's talk about. You want to go into some of the details here? You want to let Todd ask his question here and use that as a yet another springboard here?
Pod in Atlanta, Georgia. Want to say I love your podcast. Keep up the great work. Listen, I have a question for you. I bought an external hard drive, a 200 gigabyte hard drive that hooks up to the Mac via FireWire. And my question is, how can I reference that hard drive from another computer on my network? I know there has to be a way of doing that. I just don't know how to do it. If you don't mind, please send me the answer. I'll listen to it on a podcast even, or you can send it to me.
Nope. We're going to answer it right here. Okay. So when you've got a hard drive connected to one of your Macs, you can share that across the network. What you need to do is first you need to go into system preferences and sharing. Is that right, John?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then turn on personal file sharing. And make a note of what the computer name is at the top of the sharing control panel. The sharing system preference pane. And then go over to one of your other computers that's plugged into the same network, plugged into the same switch or hub or router, depending on how you've got things set up. And then what are we doing here? We go to Go in the Finder, connect to server. And at that point, the easiest thing to do is to just type in the computer name that you saw on the other computer. You can browse for it and you may find it, you may not, depending on how the network's set up. But if you type it in and hit connect, you're good to go. At that point, you type in the credentials of an administrative user. I believe it has to be an administrative user to see connected drives as opposed to just directories. So type in your username and password there, and the drive should appear in the list of things that you can mount on your Mac. Right? Did I miss something?
I was going to say there's an even easier way to do this.
All right.
You click on network and the volume shows up.
In your...
It's magic in the Finder.
Yeah.
No need to say, you know, to go to the Go menu. You just double click on the machine. When it's in the network network panel, and it'll come up and ask you pretty much the same questions. So just thought I'd toss
that
in.
Okay, so click on network, and then depending on how your network's set up, it may just appear in network, or you might have to click on my network, depending on whether you've got Windows sharing turned on one of your machines.
Yeah, now we had another question talking about FireWire sharing. I don't know if we want to...
Did we?
...move ahead with that one. Well, I think we did here.
Which one was that? Who?
Is that... Hold on. Tim.
Tim, yeah, we can read Tim's question, sure. I think we can read Tim. Yeah, there it is. Okay, so Tim writes, I have a PowerBook G4 running Tiger with all updates, and I have several external FireWire drives hooked up to the PowerBook for storing movies and TV shows. What I want to do is access those drives from my Windows PC I have hooked to my TV. Through normal Samba, I can only see the users folder that I log into, but cannot figure out how to see the external drives. Any help is greatly appreciated. You got it?
No, I don't. Because I tried. I couldn't do it.
There.
How do you do it? I found no... And that's why I thought the prior question was interesting, because Apple Talk, connections via Apple Talk from another Mac shows you all the mounted drives.
Right. But Samba connections don't.
Samba seems to be limited, and I even tried to drag in a shortcut, and that didn't do it because it didn't know what to do to make of the shortcut. FTP doesn't work either, so I don't know. Maybe I threw you a curveball here, but I don't know of a way to do this unless you're talking a third-party commercial product that can kind of figure out how to make this available via, you know, either Samba or...
Yeah.
Or FTP.
Well, you could do it with FTP, but I believe that there is a utility called Share. No. Share Menu is going the other way. I think if you just... This may be the geek challenge, because I'm pretty...
I'm thinking, because I... using every... anything except personal file sharing, a.k.a. AFP...
Yep.
Or Apple Talk over IP, I guess. I couldn't find any other protocol that made FireWire drives visible.
Okay. I believe that you can... If you want to, via the terminal, you can edit a file called /etc/smb.conf. So that's what's whatever Samba stands for, but Sierra Michael Bravo, right? And in there, you'll see that certain directories are shared. If you and I don't know the format of this file. It's been
okay.
It's been too long.
Yeah, I found a lot of references here. So if you look for, it's usually an etc smb.conf, and it explains that. And I'm sure you can find a Mac-specific one. I came across, I think I did come across, but I didn't pursue it.
So then messing with that file sounded nasty. What you would do is tell it to share /volume/whatever the name of your drive is, and you'd add that in here in addition to user home directories and that sort of thing. And I believe that will... That'll get things going.
Good one. But the default configuration,
the
even
default
with shortcuts and all that.
The default only shares home directories, yeah.
Yeah, which is...
Yeah. So if anyone knows of, if anyone knows of a utility, I thought there was a utility to do this, but I quickly can't find one. But I thought someone had released a utility that made it essentially automatic to edit this smb.conf. If you do go and edit that smb.conf file... you need to go back into sharing and then turn off Windows sharing and then turn it back on to force it to reload the contents of that smb.conf file and get things going. And we'll put a link in the show notes to the format of that smb.conf file so that you can you can have a starting point to go in and get that stuff.
Yeah, so that was a good, good pairing of questions there. So what's next, Dave?
I believe we've got Jason's Bonjour DNS issue. But before that, I wanted to talk about our sponsor for the show, Bare Bones, and specifically Yojimbo. You all know that, and I've said this before, I always love it when we have a sponsor that is advertising a product that we actually use. I use Yojimbo as a place to store everything else. I actually use it to organize the emails and the notes for the Geek Gab each week. In fact, I keep a little file going where I log everything in there. It's basically a text file, this one thing that I keep, but I also have PDFs of all the emails that came in and any pictures that are relevant, and I just store them in a little Mac Geek Gab folder, a little container inside Yojimbo, and it'll sync to all three of my Macs. So no matter where I am, if I say, oh, this would be great to mention on the show, I just drag it into Yojimbo. They've got this little quick add drawer that you can have sit on the side of your screen. You just toss something in there, and then bam, the next time I'm at whatever Mac I'm at, it's automatically synced all the way around. It uses .Mac, so you know as long as your .Mac syncing is working, and you've heard me complain about that. But that's not Yojimbo's fault. Yojimbo is, like they say, a place to store everything else. You've got a place to store your email already. You've got a place to store your calendar and your to-dos. But what about all those files that are just sort of floating around, those little snippets, serial numbers, notes, PDFs of receipts, that sort of thing? Yojimbo is the place to do it. Available at barebones.com. And now we'll let Jason take it away.
Hi, guys. It's Jason Painter from Sydney, Australia. I've got a question for your network segment. I've got three machines, a G3 iMac, a G5, and an iBook. They're all connected to each other through a Linksys WAG54G, which is a combined DSL modem, 4-port Ethernet router, and it's wireless router too. Because I copy a lot of files to the iBook, I generally turn off AirPort on the iBook and connect it via Ethernet. I started to do this because I noticed that there was some IP DNS resolution issues. That's all I can put it down to. I don't know if it's safe to leave AirPort on if you're going to Ethernet. I just thought that might confuse it. I wouldn't know what your opinion is on that. The other thing is, any one of the three machines will sometimes lose its Bonjour address. I don't know why this happens, but it means I can still see the machines via their IP address, but if I try to communicate to them with computer.local, it doesn't work. Weird thing is, after a day or so, the Bonjour address is again usable. So I don't know what's happening there. I'd like to know if you've got any ideas about that. So thanks a lot for the show. I listen to it every week, and I really enjoy it. Thanks a lot, guys.
Very interesting. So the Bonjour address is the name that's listed in the top of where it says computer name in the sharing system preference pane, or control panel, as I seem to like to call it this evening.
Mm-hmm.
Any ideas, John, on this? Why, I mean...
No.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. Unless there's something on the network competing with it, but, with a similar name.
Well, I mean, he was mentioning being concerned about sharing wireless and wired, which is a separate issue, but maybe it's related. If there are things wirelessly connecting and wreaking havoc, it could corrupt the whole, Bonjour there, right? One of these zero configuration things, kind of like Apple Talk, where everybody just kind of figures out, one of these IP addresses, like this 169 address when you get, which still works, but of course it's something that should happen here. So I don't know why they disappear like that. I just gathered that the protocol that figures out these addresses, just kind of does broadcasts among everybody on the network and says, hey, figure out your name, and they just kind of show up. So
yeah,
I'm
You may have hit on it there. If it is using broadcast to do that, and the router is for some reason filtering that stuff, then that's going to cause exactly this problem. So I would, if that starts happening, I'd power cycle the router, pull the power, wait 30 seconds, plug it back in, let it wake itself up on the network, then wake up each of your computers, or restart each of your computers so that they re-register and sort of, rebuild that that stack that's happening there. Otherwise, I'm at a loss.
It shouldn't happen.
You're absolutely right, Jason. This is not the kind of thing that is normal.
So it could be, one of the pieces of networking equipment. I mean, it may need a, any of the guys that make the mass market, broadband routers, there may be a firmware update. So
that's a good point.
Whatever you're plugged into, yep. Assuming it's not a piece of Apple equipment, there may be something else. No, I mean, I would assume the Apple stuff would do it properly. But if you have a third-party thing, it may be, very specific to, some of these, self-configuring kind of name discovery protocols. So.
Yeah.
Oh, that was a tough one.
Well, it is interesting.
One. Where's an easy one?
Well, I want to answer Jason's, he asked a little question in the middle there, which is, should I have airport and Ethernet turned on at the same time?
Oh.
And that's an interesting question, and it's actually something that I do quite a bit with here, because my MacBook Pro is a year old, and I'm still calling it a PowerBook. In addition to that, it's also connected to my network both ways, at different times. If I've got airport, what I do is in the network control panel, why do I keep calling it control panel? We're just going to call it that.
You're the network, just going back to a kinder, gentler time or something. I don't know.
In the network system preferences pane, you can, if you go to your location and then click on the show button or the show menu, normally, it's sitting on network status. If you go down to network port configurations, you'll see all of the ports listed that your computer can connect to, and you can turn them on and off with the checkboxes. That's an obvious thing. What's not obvious is that you can drag these ports around and prioritize them, right?
Yes.
So what I do is I have Ethernet be the priority, and I drag that to the top of the list, and then airport's second, and then dial-up is third, and the VPN, I've got a little VPN thing set up, is last, right? Now, depending on what I'm doing, I may move the VPN to the top, whatever. For right now, with Ethernet being at the top, even if airport's connected, even if it has the same IP address, I actually manually assign the same IP address to both Ethernet and airport so that transfers don't stop. Everything's the same. I can always address the computer no matter how it's connected. And as soon as I plug in that Ethernet cable, even though airport's connected to the router via the wireless connection, it does not send any traffic over airport because Ethernet is prioritized. And this is a Unix thing. It's just Apple's way of managing that process, and it's great. So that's one thing you may want to check on if you do have multiple interfaces that are, you know, active at different times, is go in there and just drag them around and you know, in most cases, you'd probably want your hardwired connection to take priority over your wireless connection, but there may be instances where you don't. So so that's the now, that's our story.
Yeah. The thing I want to try someday, I haven't really looked at this, but have you looked at the internet sharing part of sharing?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't really, because I probably don't have the right setup, but that right. looks like something we may want to explore at some point in the future.
Well, it's actually worth talking about, because what that does is if you've got airport in a computer and Ethernet in the computer, if you've got your cable modem connected directly to your computer with Ethernet, so your cable modem, your computer is getting the IP address. There is no router in the way. Mm-hmm. If you turn on internet sharing here, you can share the cable modem connection via your computer, and what happens is you're turning your Mac into a NAT router, and then all these other clients can connect via airport to your Mac and share your internet connection. The only caveat is you've got to leave that computer on in order for all the other computers to connect. And you can do this with not just an Ethernet hardwired connection, but if you've got a dial-up connection, you can share that over airport too. And I've done it. Of course, it's not fast with dial-up, but you know, it works. So
then I would think in that case, well, the tab right next to it, firewall, you better have that on.
That's a good point.
Directly connecting.
Yeah. If you're connecting.
Otherwise, you are going to be, and I've done this. You may have done this too, but, you know, just get a new computer and plug it in. And just get a you know, any sort of intrusion detection equipment or something that logs incoming attempts. You'll just be amazed at all the people that are eager to speak with you over any port available.
Yeah.
So,
Most of the attacks are Windows stuff, right?
Yeah, but still, I mean, I've set it up where I would just have, you know, both Apple and Windows ports, and there are people looking for Apple Talk over IP because
you can do that.
Technically, you can, but it's such a relatively small target, which actually leads to a little, take a little sideline here. One of the guys I spoke to at the conference, I went to the RSA conference, which is about you know, security professionals. Yeah. One of the guys at McAfee, and you know, the thing is, you and I think our position is that the Mac is relatively less prone to all these nasty things like malware and stuff like that.
Right, right.
But he was like, and actually, he's going to be starting a podcast too. And I said, cool. You know, you should really talk about this aspect. But the Mac is not immune. It's less of a target, which is why it just brought up this thought. But, you know, don't be deluded that you could just plug your Mac into the internet with no protection and you're going to be fine, because, you know, there's a lot of bad stuff out there. At least that's my position. If you want to try it, you know, let us know if you've plugged your Mac right into your cable modem or whatever and you think you're not infected with something.
Well, what would they be infected with?
Well, I'm thinking some of the more Unix-specific attacks, because you know, Apple is based on, you know, the OpenBSD core, and every now and then they have exploits that are, you know, fixed with that. So, just that in and of itself. So I would say, you know, yeah, don't go with a firewall down. Maybe, you know.
Yeah, although out of the box, if you are in fact doing that out of the box, all the services that would be attackable are turned off on that machine, right? I mean, you don't have personal file sharing is disabled. Remote login is certainly disabled. Remote desktop is disabled. So none of that stuff is open. If you were to just plug an out-of-the-box Mac into the internet, I would actually argue that you're fine. It's when you start turning on those services that let other people in. At that point, you'd probably want to turn on the firewall and manage things so that only the right people can get in. But I think out of the box, you're safe. I really do.
So I say, yeah, okay, I'm with you. Out of the box, without doing any sort, especially, you know, file sharing or, you know, SSH or FTP and stuff like that.
Right.
Because they're still finding, and, you know, it's still one of the most common bugs here is the dreaded buffer overflow, which if you're a C programmer, especially, though it's not unique to C, you can buffer overflow in any
lots of languages. PHP can do it too. Yep.
Even Java.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely.
I'll have the Java people shake their fists at me saying that's not possible, but
have you seen it?
Yeah. It's possible. You can destroy things in any language. It's harder in some than others. Anyways, moving right along.
All right. You want to go back to Joe's? Let's see what Joe has to say here about it, print servers.
Hey, John and Dave. Joe here from Raleigh again. We're just listening to part two of your MacCast 88, I think it was. Mac Geek Gab.
Adam does a fine job, too.
And there was a question a lady had about setting up, home networking and stuff. And one topic that possibly might be of interest to folks along that line is, the difference between routers and switches and hubs and how you set your network addressing and safety that you turn on for wireless, all this kind of stuff. I know you guys already know anyway. But one part that is trickier for some is how one would set up a print server, which is one real advantage of, a home networking scheme. If you buy one, semi-expensive laser printer, how do you share that with everybody else in the house, including Windows clients? And that's a little trickier than some because you can have to set a fixed address below the dynamically assigned addresses for it to work right. And those type of things. That is not always clearly stated and done with instructions that come with these things. And that would something be possibly quite interesting to the listeners. Anyway, have a good day, and we'll listen to you soon.
Hey, John. Hey, Dave. Mm-hmm. My name is Brian from Central Pennsylvania, longtime listener, and I love the podcast. I'm really enjoying all the Mac tips. Just got myself a refurbished MacBook, Core Duo, and I gotta say, I love it. I'm thrilled with the whole two-processor thing. It's just really zippy. In fact, I was able to get a friend to switch over from PC to Mac, so score for me.
Score for your friend.
My question is, and I hope you can get to this before you do the networking show, I have a wireless network at home running a Netgear router. My wife has an iBook and I also have the MacBook. So we're running two wireless notebooks off of the same internet connection, and that's going really well. But what I wanted to do is stick maybe definitely a printer, a USB printer, and possibly like a network attached drive. I was wondering what you would think would be the best way to do that. I know with the new AirPort Extremes, they have the USB port, and I think you can plug a hub up to them. I didn't know if you had any suggestions as to wireless print servers or if I should just go with the AirPort. Thanks. I won't leave my email and audio comment because that always gets cut off. Talk to you guys later. Keep up the good work.
All right, so network printing. There's a couple ways to do it. There's the way that Joe kind of alluded to, which is connecting it to your computer, and then there's the way that Brian alluded to, connecting it to the network directly, if you will, or at least to one of the routers on the network. So let's talk let's talk about Joe's solution first here, because if you don't have an Apple AirPort base station or don't have one that has this capability, and you do want to share a printer, you're stuck doing it by connecting directly to a Mac. So, and is this what you do, John, or do you do the other route?
I have my laser printer plugged into my Linksys wireless hub deal.
Okay, all right. So your laser printer actually has network capability built into it, right?
So it's an IP printer, What I do is I do it as a LPD
right.
Type printer.
So your printer is sharing itself over the network.
So the printer, when it's on, has unique IP address, and then anybody who runs print setup utility, which is the utilities folder, when you say add, you then say add IP printer, and the protocol, comes up with a few of them, and the protocol you want to use is LPD, which is a default, and then you put in the IP address of the printer, which mine I was able to set through the printer's interface, and then the queue is default, and that's pretty much it. So I've used that quite frequently, both at home and at work, is if you have a printer that you can assign an IP address on the network somewhere, You know, OS X and Windows both have support for that, so that's a good solution, especially for mixed environments.
Yep.
I think, though, it gets a bit technical because it doesn't show up like some other types of printers.
And it's not cheap, right? I mean, you probably get an older laser printer if it's not showing up. Most networkable laser printers these days, if they come with networking built in, will have Bonjour support right in them, and they'll just pop right.
Has both IP and AppleTalk.
So there you go. Okay.
So actually, some programs they have use AppleTalk, but especially for the Windows machines, they, of course, Windows, and I found this actually researching another question, Windows doesn't really understand AppleTalk anymore.
Right.
Especially XP. There's nothing built in anymore.
Right. Okay. So the solution John's talking about is if your printer itself supports networking directly, your printer probably has an Ethernet port on it and you're just plugging straight in. That works great, but it's not cheap. You need to buy a printer that's got network capability, and often that can add, you know, between $100 and $300 to the price. Hmm. If you're buying an inkjet printer, more often than not, it's not going to have any network capability. It's going to have a USB port on it, and that's it. So you're stuck connecting it. It needs something to talk to the network on its behalf, and so you can do that one of two ways. Like Joe said, you can connect it to your Mac. What you need to do at that point is go into the printer setup utility and choose to share that printer. Once you've done that, if you turn on Windows sharing, Windows client should see it automatically. As you browse in through, you'll browse to the computer, and then when you connect to the computer, if you've got your home directory shared, that'll appear, and then also the printer will appear. Trick, of course, is that you've then got to go install the drivers on the Windows machine for that particular printer, because the Mac, of course, can't share them. But Macs and Windows machines alike, should see printers that are shared that way. Again, you need to go into the printer setup utility, share the printer, and then also make sure that you've got personal file sharing as well as Windows file sharing enabled in the sharing system preferences. I guess it's called Windows sharing, not Windows file sharing. The other way to do it is later model airport base stations. And I'm not sure, does the Airport Express have a USB port for a printer? I think
yes.
It does. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It does.
So they allow you to connect the printer via USB to the base station. And then the base station takes care of sharing the printer for you. Again, you're not connecting the printer to the network, you're connecting it to the base station. The base station is acting as the print server and managing that process on the network for you. If you have a base station, go ahead.
Yet another thing, because I'll talk about the other part of my setup here. So I have an old, thank you, HP, but HP 990 CSE inkjet.
Yep. Perfect.
And they also were nice enough to provide a WP100 wireless print server. This is a box from HP, and I'm sure every print inkjet printer vendor has this. This box has a parallel port, and this printer has a parallel cable. It basically plugs into it, but the box itself is basically a 802.11 access point.
Okay.
So it connects. So that's another option, is that there are wireless print servers.
Ah.
Like this device, so one end plugs physically into the printer, the other end is registered on my wireless network, because you actually plug in to this through a configuration utility. You give it the name of your base station and the channel and the encryption and all that great stuff, and then it appears as an AppleTalk device on my network, this particular one.
That's
cool.
You
can set it up for IP also. So that's neat, because so another option for folks that want to share printers is look at your printer vendor. They probably have a wireless access point. And of course, if you have a wireless Linksys or Airport or whatever, unless your airport, like the Express, already has the port, then that's a very cool way of, and especially I would think in corporate or educational settings,
yep,
where you got to wheel a printer around and you know you're probably near a wireless access point. That's a very, very cool solution. Of course, this one just kind of sits here, but
sure. it's worth noting that most of these wireless and wired print servers will work with multiple brands of printer. If you buy an HP, JetDirect box, it's chances are it's going to work with just about any printer you plug into it. It will share the services, and then of course you need to load the right drivers on your Mac. I have a a Lexmark laser printer here that a year and a half ago, I had all those weird problems with the hubs thing and things blowing up because of the lightning, and things weren't protected quite right when we moved into the house here. And one of the things that blew up was the network card inside of my Lexmark laser printer. Now, this is a really nice laser printer. I had no intention of replacing it, but it couldn't talk to my computers anymore. So what I did is I just happened, because of a job I did years ago and a client thing, I had an extra HP JetDirect box. And so this one was wired. So I plugged the Ethernet cable into the JetDirect box. I pulled it out of the printer, plugged it into the JetDirect box, plugged the JetDirect box into the printer's USB port, and it shares that Lexmark printer just fine. It no problem at all. So,
well, hats off to standards.
That's right. And that's exactly right. Yeah, that's exactly right. So,
okay.
I think we've pretty much hit the limit there. Is there anything else you have that you wanted to mention there, John?
No, I think we covered it. I think we
bring the band in then.
Got a hopefully a pretty good intro to networking there for those that don't like to network. Or can't or won't.
Of course, please send in your questions to MacGeekGab@MacObserver.com. You can call us
206-666-GEEK. Right.
That's 4335. Let's see. You can also Skype them to MacGeekGab. And we will pepper these questions in with our show next week. We'll be back to our normal routine where we're just answering questions, and we'll have a couple of themes going, I'm sure. The next featured show, and we don't know when that will be, but I've got this idea, John. So I figured I'd share this with you now. Recently, I've been keeping track of all the little things that I do on my Mac to keep it clean and keep it running smooth and all of that stuff. So I think if we take about another three to 5 weeks here and just kind of let that stuff build up, we can do a show next month on keeping your Mac clean. You know,
I don't know, man. What do you like, eat around your computer? Or
I do.
Around it?
That's right. That's exactly right. Yeah. That's
how we... But no, we're talking about all the cruft that will accumulate on your computer as you find all these wonderful new toys that we tell you about. And how do you get rid of them?
That's right.
Your system gets clogged.
Bogged down. Yep. And
so
we're
going to get...
I even optimized my Mac as an exercise in what to and not to do and whether or not it makes a difference. I took that plunge for all of you. So we will share the results of that and more. Yep, that's right.
Did you optimize your drive?
I did.
Wow.
Yeah.
And you cleaned out all the cruft with various utilities.
I cleaned the cruft first, and then I optimized. And
did you measure the before and after?
I did.
Kind of quantitative data here?
Yeah, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. So we can talk about that.
You want to vote?
We can vote on Podcast Alley.
Yeah. Or iTunes or...
Yeah. Know. Review the show on iTunes. I wanted to mention, we've had this weird thing. You know, iTunes broke the whole mono podcast with EQ thing, right? If you have EQ on your iPod and the podcast or the file you're playing is mono, it will crash your iPod. So, of course, we went to stereo at that point, and we figured, well, if we're going to go to stereo, we might as well pan ourselves left and right. There's a weird thing with this Mackie Onyx 1220 board, and I'm not sure why, but visually panning our individual channels does not seem to relate quite the same as to what you would expect to hear audibly. So we're trying to get that right, but as some of you have mentioned, John sometimes feels like he's in your glove box, and we're doing our best to avoid that. So I think this week, if anyone's in the glove box, I would
be.
Yeah, but hopefully neither one of us.
I don't want to be in your glove box.
Yeah, that's it. Let's go. We're done. Cashfly Hosting is where you've downloaded this podcast. The Podcast Marketplace, 6i Isolator earphones from Etymotic, the A5 desktop speakers from Audio Engine, TeachMac from TeachMac.com, and Yojimbo, of course, from BareBones.com. Backbeat Media Podcast Network.
Yeah, so I was in California, but you know why I'm back?
Why are you back?
Because I didn't get caught.
You know, if you are going to get caught, the best people to get caught by would be the police. Did you see that they reunited today? They're touring this summer. And if anybody knows the secret code to pre-buy tickets for the Fenway Park show this week, that if you're a
Fenway,
Best Buy member,
get out.
Yeah, dude. So if you know that code, please send it to me because I want to buy those tickets. So, yeah, don't get caught.
Made up.